Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, and welcome to Delicious Talk, the segment bringing sexy back. This is your host, Gail Delicious Johnson. That was Aretha Franklin, the queen of soul, Dr. Feelgood. It's 10:30 p.m. Do you know where your children are? Okay, tonight we have a very special guest, but first I'm going to talk a little bit about what my day was about. It was a good day today. I got a few things accomplished and working on a few things. The weather was a little muggy here. I went outside and I could barely breathe, but, you know, any day that I get up and can be out and about is a good day, so I'm not going to complain. I have my co-hostess on the line. I'm going to bring in the Dino first. Good evening.
Hey.
How you doing, darling?
Come on, I'm just deeming this wonderful Wednesday.
Yes,
wide up,
yes.
Wonderful Wednesday.
Hump Day, yes. Yes, it is.
Yeah, and that's another good name for it.
Yeah, that's what everybody refers to it as, Hump Day. Yeah. So,
yeah.
And I have Rhea on the line. I'm just going to bring her in briefly because she's going through some things right now, but I do want everybody to, you know, say hello to Rhea as well. Good evening, Rhea, darling. How are you?
Well, I'm doing
Good evening.
Yeah, that's good. Well, sweetie, whenever you have anything to say, you could just raise your hand or not, because I know what you're, you know, that you're just here for the support, and, you know, if you have something to say, you can just raise your hand. Okay?
Okay.
All right, darling. Okay, so like I said, we do have a very special guest this evening, and I'm going to let you folks know a little bit about him. He's William Lewis Harvey, a nom de plume, worked in California during the era of the California medical malpractice insurance crises, as well as afterwards when the MICRA law took effect, limiting the monetary awards for pain and suffering in trial verdicts. He also chaired a committee that reviewed all malpractice claims involving a major California hospital. Harvey continues to follow the national attempt to control the cost of medical malpractice litigation known as tort reform. While Malpractice, the novel, is a work of fiction, it is rooted in the personal experience and firsthand knowledge Harvey acquired during his years on the front lines of the clash between the medical and legal professions. Details of some of the cases he experienced or engraved in his memory and small portions of these find their way into the novel, probably a common occurrence with writers of realistic fiction. Malpractice, the novel, refers to tort reform, a tort in civil law and wrongful act. Harvey, like many others, believes that California's MICRA, that's what M-I-C-R-A, law is a good model for nation for national tort reform within modification. Okay, so without further ado, I think we're going to bring in William Harvey so he can, you know, let us know what his novel is about and, you know, just what his works were as far as being in that crisis during that time. So without further ado, let's bring in our guest this evening. Good evening, William. How are you?
I'm great, Gail. Thank you very much for having me on your show. I appreciate it.
Oh, no doubt, no doubt, because I'm very interested in the novel and, you know, your work as far as being in that time period and, you know, fighting the malpractice laws like you did. So, yeah, it's going to be very interesting. I have Jadino, my co-host, on the line, and Rhea, of course, is on the line. And we're going to, you know, start with, first I'd like to know, this is your first novel, right? And what inspired you to write it?
You're right. While I was in medical practice, I wrote articles for medical journals, but that's nonfiction, and it's a very standard way of writing of nonfiction. I retired, and then these cases stayed in my mind, or bits of them at any rate. And I finally had to, I guess, to get them out there. I decided to write about them. And I decided that I could write about them better in fiction. If I wrote nonfiction, I'd have to describe them pretty exactly. And although I could change the names, the cases would be similar to the cases that actually occurred. Whereas if I did fiction, I could not only use bits and pieces of these cases, which were fascinating, but also loosen up and make them more interesting and also make them more understandable to the reader.
Mm-hmm.
In the process, however, I mean, that sounds pretty straightforward and it's all very standard stuff, but as I started to write this thing, I discovered, of course, that I had to have characters because it's fiction. There are people. Like, as soon as I started to write, I realized I had to have a plaintiff's attorney because this is a malpractice case and it needs an attorney. It also needs a plaintiff and a judge and all these. And as these people sort of came to life in my mind, I discovered that I had to write about their lives in a way that they fit into this case. And when you start writing about people's lives, I've heard other writers say this, they sort of take over as if they were individuals that you've just discovered, and they're telling you, the writer, how to write about them.
That is
true. It's a fascinating experience. And particularly in this case, because as these people came to life, not only did their lives come to life, but I discovered that they had sexual lives as well.
Mm-hmm.
And these sort of forced themselves into the book, although initially it wasn't to have any real sexual component.
Mm-hmm.
But because they are real people, there's explicit sexual portions of their lives that forced itself, if you will, into the book.
Okay, so you said that these cases that are in the book are based on non-fictional cases. Can you give us an example of a case without giving away too much?
Well, the case that I describe is a case of a child, a 10-year-old child who bumps her head on a jungle gym at a school playground. And it doesn't seem like much of an injury. She bumps her head and she's knocked out for a minute or so and then cries, and then the friends come around and she seems okay. And she goes home. But she starts having trouble when she gets home, and her mother takes her to an emergency room,
mm-hmm.
which most people would do. And at the ER, the house doctor, the resident, examines her and finds that she's seems okay, but she has with a very slow heart rate. Her pulse is slow. Now, the average person doesn't know this, but a slow pulse indicates often that there's pressure within the head. As pressure builds up inside your head, your pulse rate tends to slow down.
Hmm.
And the resident knew this, and he wanted to admit her to the hospital and have the neurosurgeon see her. But as a resident, he had to have his workup approved by a person on the staff. He was just in training.
Right.
So at most of these teaching hospitals, the staff person has to approve it. And a staff pediatrician came by, a very well-known, very busy, high-profile guy, and he looked at it and said, no, it's not that. You can send the child home.
Mm-hmm.
He said it was just a little concussion and wasn't much to it. So the child was sent home, and then by the time her father came home, she was getting very difficult to arouse. She was almost going in, she was going into a coma.
Mm-hmm.
And so they brought her back to the hospital, and turned out that she had bleeding in her head, and there was an emergency life-saving operation on her brain to drain a blood clot which was pressing on her brain and would have killed her if she hadn't had that emergency procedure.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was the... And then she recovered, but she had some residual damage which resulted in this malpractice suit. Medical malpractice is a situation in which a wrongful act, in this case sending the child home, causes damage to a patient, and according to the tort idea in law, the patient is entitled to some recompense for that. So this was the actual trial in the case malpractice, the novel. It has some, it and other bits of it have some basis in actual fact, but they're obviously the things have been changed to see that you cannot identify the actual case.
Okay, well, go on, I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just saying, as I said, the sexual part of it, the sexual lives of the three main characters was pure imagination. It came out of the characters brought it with them, but realistically, that means that it came out of my unconscious and not the actual case.
Mm-hmm. Now, since your novel is based on your own personal experience, why did you choose to write it as a book of fiction, rather than an autobiography? Rather than a biography.
Right. Well, as I pointed out, the case itself, if it were either biography or nonfiction, would have to be described pretty exactly as it occurred. And a biography or the description of the case would be of great interest to people who are in the field, but the average layman who doesn't know much about medicine or neurosurgery would probably not find it very fascinating. It's a case and he or she doesn't know the names and the details of it, and in that sense, it's not that interesting to the average reader. So my thought was that by doing a fictional version of it, I could get it to be more interesting and also in the meantime explain the interior part of malpractice and neurosurgery to the average reader. Mm-hmm. I could be much more explanatory to the average person than I might in either biography, memoir, or a nonfiction description of the case.
Oh, okay. Well, that sounds very interesting. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back, and we're going to dive right back into the novel, The Malpractice, okay? We'll be right back.
You're listening to Bringing Sexy Back, right here on Delicious Talk Radio. There is no religion or politics spoken here, only delicious adult conversation. Audience participation is encouraged, so log in and create an account to engage in conversation in our chat room. Feel free to call in with your questions and comments at 646-652-2877. That's 646-652-2877. And let's get this delicious talk conversation going.
David Bristol. Brandon Brewster, where'd you get that woman at?
What you talking about?
That girl had one leg in the east, one leg in the west. She said you was good, but backward was the best.
Wait a minute, wait a minute. Your woman had her left leg in the north, right leg in the south, and black foot. I ain't gonna tell you what she did with her mouth. Nah, that's how it goes. Now listen.
That night of year.
David Braxton, Dirty Woman. Okay, that song tickles me. Anyway, we have a very special guest this evening, William Harvey, who back in the 60s and the 80s was fighting malpractice suits and was in that era back then. And we spoke of one suit that he won, crisis that in a book that he wrote, Malpractice. And if you have any questions or comments for our guests this evening, feel free to call in. The call-in number is 646-652-2877. Again, the call-in number is 646-652-2877. Okay, William, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, okay.
Still here.
Now, how did writing a novel differ from the work, you know, all the articles you wrote over the years as you worked in the medical profession? What was the difference, you know, for writing the book?
Well, writing a medical article is a very standard, method. The medical journals require a certain form. You start off with an introduction. You then explain what you did in the study, the methods. Then you describe the results, and then you, at the last part, you describe your interpretation, and then there's the conclusion, and then there's a bunch of references. It's a very standard established way of writing, but it doesn't require any originality in terms of writing ability. It's standard. If you use the proper English and interpretation and periods in the right place, everything, the punctuation, everything is pretty standard, and that's checked, and if it isn't, they will change it to that. So it's pretty established, and there's no real place for your imagination other than interpreting what you've done, and you started off with an idea that you were going to try to prove or disprove. So that's how nonfiction medical writing goes, whereas fiction is just the reverse. There's almost no restriction, just so that people can read it and understand it. And, of course, even some novels aren't even understandable, but your imagination is the important part of of fiction. So it's an entirely different enterprise than writing medical nonfiction.
Just exactly how long have you been in this profession? Are you still in it? Are you retired or what?
Oh, I'm long since retired. I was in it for 50 years or a little more than 50 years. So I'm an old guy.
Okay.
No question about that.
Okay, exactly what was your position and your title? Because we never spoke about that. I'm sorry, we skipped over that.
Well, because I'm using a pseudonym or a nom de plume, I don't want to go into that in much detail, but I've been in a medical school, I've been in a hospital private practice, I've been a head of a department in a private hospital, but I don't want to give any more detail than that.
So why did you use a pseudonym for a malpractice and novel?
Well, good point. Number one, it's a totally different activity than my medical thing, and I didn't want one to interfere with the other. But the other thought was that with all the explicit sex in there, I'm not sure I wanted my family to be identified with me in case the book became famous, which hasn't happened as yet.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So let me ask you this, because I don't think I asked you this before. When did you write this book?
When did I?
Yeah.
Well, I started in 2000 and, oh, I think 2008 or 9. The reason I say that is that as I was writing it in 2010, there was an interesting essay in the New York Times Book Review by a woman named Katie Royfe. And the point that she made in this essay was that many of the young male novelists in the U.S. were not writing about sex at all. I mean, mm-hmm. Zero. They didn't even mention it. And I thought, well, that's kind of crazy because the whole society has been changing, and television, movies, cable TV, everything has been becoming much more explicit. I mean, movies have had much more explicit sex in them, as have cable TV and even regular TV, and it's as if the novelists were putting their heads in the sand. So I thought, well, as long as my characters are bringing sex with them, I might as well add it to the book.
Okay. Wow. So is this the only, this is the only book that you've written? Do you have any plans on writing anything else as far as the profession that you were in, or is this it?
I think this is it. It's taken me quite a while to get this published because I spent, when I finished it up and did several drafts, I tried to get a regular publisher and an agent, and I spent about a year doing that and had no luck whatsoever. So then I went to what's called CreateSpace, which is part of Amazon for self-publishing. And I went through that, and that took me quite a long time to get it out. And then the first time it came out, there was some mistakes in it. I had to remove it and redo it. And so finally, the what I call a second edition is out now. And I just got the second edition on Kindle about a week ago. So now it's finally out there on both Amazon and Kindle.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been such a long thing, I have no plans for doing another one at this point.
Okay. Okay, now, You wrote about a clash between the medical and legal fields, which occurred in the 60s and 70s in California. What made this period of time so important historically?
That's an interesting question as to why this happened. Starting in the late 50s and 60s into the first half of the 70s, the jury awards in medical malpractice cases kind of ballooned up. In a malpractice case, there are two portions of the verdict. One of them is the amount of money that it costs to take care of the person, plus the loss of his or her future working, in other words, the economic damage. But then there's a second part called pain and suffering, which is kind of self-explanatory, and there was no limit on pain and suffering. And the juries at that time were gradually increasing the awards on pain and suffering. Now, why this started, I don't know. I know in the late 50s and early 60s in Northern California, there were several well-known and very flamboyant plaintiff's attorneys who were written up in the newspapers, and they were sort of famous for getting large awards, and this might have set the thing off, but the awards for pain and suffering were just going up and up. And most physicians, almost all physicians, carry what's called medical malpractice insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as these awards went up, the insurance rates went up geographically into huge amounts, so that in certain fields in which there was a greater risk of malpractice, the annual premium for medical malpractice insurance got so high that some physicians were forced out of practice, some left the state, some retired, and I call this the medical malpractice insurance crisis. And that's what the 1975 law, the MICRA, the Medical Injury Compensation Reform Act in California, stopped by putting a cap on the pain and suffering awards, as well as several other changes in the trials.
So is that just in California, or is that across the board?
Well, medical malpractice is a state problem, so every state has their own situation, and there are some states that have followed up and put in certain rules limiting awards, but others have not, and in some states it's still a big problem, and this is why there's been pressure from some physicians to get U.S. Congress to put through something called tort reform, which I mentioned in the book. And
right.
That would sort of, it doesn't seem likely. They've been pushing it for quite a while, and the Congress we have now doesn't do anything anyway. So that isn't likely to happen. And so there are still states where pain and suffering awards can be extremely high. It is a state-by-state problem.
I know that because I know of a young man who lost his wife. It was a malpractice. And the case went on, I don't know, maybe almost a year. But they settled out of court. Now, what would cause them to settle out of court opposed to going to court? Would they be awarded more money, or that's just how it happens, you know, because they were saying something about one of the doctors didn't want to comply. You know, he didn't want to be found guilty or whatever.
Right,
but it definitely
right.
was a malpractice suit because the person won, but they settled out of court because
right.
they said if he took it to court, he had a chance of losing. But I can't understand why that would happen if the doctor settled out of court. So how does that...
I understand just what you're saying. In some states, and this is true in California, they have set up the thing where if a physician is found to be guilty of malpractice and the award is greater than a certain amount, there's a registry in which his name is entered so that then anyone, any person who may want to go to him can look up this entry and find out that he's, his name is there and say, oh, Dr. Smith lost 3 malpractice cases. I don't know that I want to see him. And that may be true in other states as well. I'm not aware of the rules in other states, but I know California has had this sort of rule. The other reason for settling out of court is that if it's clearly, if the doctor and the insurance company are very clear that they're going to lose, in other words, he did something that was so obviously wrong that it's clear he's going to lose, they can sometimes, first thing, they'll save money by not going to trial because the trial costs a fair amount of money. And secondly, they can settle for what they figure is less than what they might lose if they went to trial. Some of that is just guesswork, but a lot of cases have been settled out of court, and they sometimes insist that the people sign a thing that they won't reveal anything to the newspapers. But it's a fairly common thing, or used to be, in medical malpractice.
Hmm. What is the hardest case that you've ever worked on?
Oh. that's a tough one. Well, I suspect this one that is in my book is one of the hardest. It was a lot worse than I described the case. Yeah, the actual case was much worse. The outcome was much worse. So that was a very hard case I was involved in. A lot of other cases were ones that I reviewed in the committee but didn't get personally involved in. I'm trying to think of I remember a case I had to go back to Detroit, I think, to testify, in which an ear, nose, and throat doctor penetrated through the top of the nose into the brain. That was a terrible case. That's the sort of thing that you never forget.
Wow. Well, we're going to take another little break, and we'll be right back.
Listen up, I got to tell you about this beautiful author and publisher, Gail Delicious Johnson. Gail Delicious Johnson is proud to announce the publication of her new, revised issue of her latest suspenseful novel, Back to Zero. Read this riveting story of intrigue, conflict, love, and suspense. Follow the trail of abuse, secrets, lies, and love. And check it out. You can't just read the back of the book because you have to prepare yourself for the mind-blowing, explosive ending. Order your personally autographed copy of Back to Zero by visiting www.jjpublishing.com. That's www.jayjaypublishing.com.
baby, I'm staying. You know why? I've got staying power. Lady, I've made plans in a fancy restaurant where we can dance. My favorite dress, you know the one that oozes sexiness. Tonight, when we make love, I'm gonna work your body with my tongue. Oh, baby, my mission's clear. The love that keeps you here. I got staying power. Just when you think it's over, I'll come right back again. I got staying power. Just when you think it's over, I'll come right back again. Makes a good thing last. Tease me with your emotion. Soon we'll share nature's body lotion. Are you ready to free? Girl, you know you got just what I need. Baby, my mission's clear. It's more than love that keeps you here.
I got staying power. Just when you think it's over,
I'll come
right back again.
Right back again.
I got staying power.
then. Welcome back to Delicious Talk, the segment bringing sexy back. And this is your host, Gail Delicious Johnson. I'm on here with my two marvelous co-hosts, Jade and Jadino, and our very special guest, William Harvey. All righty, so we're going to get right back into speaking with William Harvey because the show is really getting ready to come to an end, and this has been one exciting hour, you know, talking with William. So we're going to get in a few more questions with him, and then, you know, we're going to bring this show to an end. All right, William, so, you know, your novel is a legal courtroom drama. Why did you include so much sex in it?
Well, the sex, as I said, was part of the life history of the three main characters. And they, as they came into life, they, and I described their entire lives as a way of understanding where they're coming from and why they're involved in this and how they're involved. And you can't really describe a life properly without the sexual part of it. As I said, in 2010, this writer said that male novelists were excluding sex, but that's artificial in a way. The latest article that I read was from USA Today, and it's something called Romance Unlaced. Let's talk about sex, baby, in USA Today. And her point is that nowadays, many more women writing romance novels are writing very explicit descriptions of sex. And I think that's coming out into the world, along with television, cable TV, movies. Now, admittedly, if you're strictly talking about a medical malpractice case, it's not sexy. But the characters, and at least half of my book, I think, is about these characters. I have separate chapters describing the lives of each of these three characters, and to describe their lives without their sexual lives is, I think, artificial.
Mm-hmm. That is true, because and anything, even on the TV commercials and you know, books you pick up, there is a legit, a smash, or dot of sex involved in there somewhere, because sex sells, and that's what makes the world go round. So,
right.
You know, that's just how it is. So I can understand that. Yeah, it probably would be quite boring just speaking of medical terms and medical terminology and this and that. So put that little sex up in there, and people will want to read it, you know.
That's my hope. That's my hope.
Yeah. So what do you hope to accomplish through the publication of your book, Malpractice, the Novel?
Well, I hope to, aside from the sex, I hope to get an understanding of malpractice litigation out to people who, the average person doesn't really know much about medical malpractice litigation. And sometimes they may be in a situation where they would even be considering filing a case. They've had a bad experience, and they wonder about it. And this gives them some explanation of what it's all about, but also the pros and cons and the long and hard experience of going through a medical malpractice case, which will probably discourage some people, and the fact that sometimes these cases can be a little bit dishonest.
Yes, they can. They most definitely can, because I worked in a hospital for 20-plus years. In the very first hospital that I worked in, I was just hearing so many horror stories that the doctors had made mistakes on patients, then they lied to the family members, and, you know, just getting away with things like that because nobody is there, but a nurse had expressed what had happened to this one patient. He had came in for to have something removed. I don't know if it was a kidney or whatever, but what had happened was they had removed the wrong whatever it was. It was taken out, and
right.
when they had tried to put it back, the man had a heart attack and died. And they told the family that he had died during the operation. They didn't say what had happened that had caused him to, you know, have that heart attack. And they got away with that, you know.
Wow.
Then another case was a little girl, they had given her too much anesthesia. And they told the parent that she had suffered a heart attack. They didn't say that they had overdosed her with anesthesia and killed her.
Right.
You know, then they cut off a man's foot, and he said before he even, I think he's supposed to have gotten his right foot amputated. And he told them, you know, make sure y'all take off the right foot. Lo and behold, they took off the wrong foot, and they still had to take off the other foot. So they left this man with no feet, you know.
Right.
But they, and then yeah. I also understand malpractice suits are the hardest suits to win sometimes, because if you don't
sometimes.
Have a witness or the doctor doesn't actually confess to it, sometimes you just, they just will drop them, or, you know, you're just lost.
But,
so, you know, I've heard, you know, a lot of horror stories in the hospitals. And this one patient, he was a burn victim, and they put, you know how they put you in those big tubs to scrub your skin
right.
down? They had put
right.
a guy in one of those tubs, and the nurse had gotten a phone call. She goes and answer the phone and come back. The guy had slid down and drowned in the water. They told the family he succumbed to the burns that was on his body, you know. But
wow.
they just cover stuff up and, you know, keep people in the dark and lie. And, you know, so you have to be very, very on top of your game, so to speak. So I guess you...
Right.
probably helped a lot of people out, and I know they appreciate that. And, you know, like you said, you really, you know, hope your book gives people insight to the different things of, you know, wanting to file a lawsuit and how to go about it and different things like that. Can you tell people where they can order your book and how to get in touch with you?
Right. The book is available on Amazon.com, the title, and also on Kindle. If you... have a Kindle or one of those gadgets in which you can read the downloaded...
Right, a Nook or a Kindle.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You can get it on Kindle or Amazon. Amazon has the paperback version, and you go to Amazon.com/books and just put in Malpractice, the Novel. That's the title. It's
okay.
actually, at this point, it's the second edition, but that should bring it up. The same thing with Kindle, Malpractice, the Novel. There are several books entitled Malpractice, but none of them are entitled The Novel.
Right. Okay, can you let our listeners know how they can get in touch with you as well?
I don't have a you can go onto our website, which is in small letters without a space, malpracticethenovel.com, and I think you can leave comments there.
Okay. All righty, then. This has been a very informative, exciting hour, and I do appreciate you coming on. We're going to give you a great big round of applause for being our special guest this evening.
Gail, thank you.
Okay. Okay, Jadino and Jay, do you have any closing remarks you'd like to leave with William? Or any last-minute questions you'd like to ask him?
Oh, I don't have a question, but I know somebody that was going through the same thing. So a book like that, I could see them taking advantage of it, or maybe it could have helped them. Then it was a guy on my job. They left a sponge in him in surgery, and he only had one leg, and they didn't amputate him. They just took all the bones out of him for some reason because he was a diabetic or whatever. And they just made his wife go through so much stuff to get her money through the insurance company, because they were, like, coming up on our job, interviewing us. And it was a picture we had made for him when he retired, and it was a picture of him on the heavy equipment that he used to run. And what happened, you know how you take a picture and the date be wrong? So they was trying to say he was still functioning at this point in his life because of the date was wrong on the picture. So, like I said, they were just trying to avoid that malpractice suit. But I think she finally ended up coming all right. But she used to just call me and cry, like, at least twice a week until they got it straight.
Well, that's good. That's good to hear. Jay, do you have any closing remarks or any last-minute questions you'd like to ask?
I was piggybacking off of what Jadino said, because I've known someone who had their leg amputated, and during the amputation, they actually left a utensil in her leg, and with all the swelling and everything, they did they scanned her and realized that they left something behind and had to do an emergency surgery, and they didn't know about pursuing a lawsuit, so something with a book like that would help people. So yeah. I just wanted to say we appreciate you for coming on, and thank you for educating us on that.
Right, right.
My pleasure.
So, Jade, let everybody know what you do and how they can get in touch with you.
They can get in touch with us on Erotic Talk Radio on Facebook. They can just look for Erotic Talk Radio, and that way they can get in some of our discussions that we be having about relationship topics and stuff. We also have a show that airs every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, where Miss Delicious is my co-host. And we also have a station, WTLC Talk Radio, and we have a group page as well. So check us out there on Facebook as well.
All right, Jadino, you want to give everybody out how to get in touch with you and what you do?
Oh, yeah, I'm Everything Art. You can reach me on Facebook right now only, or you can Gmail me at jdinoblasso@gmail.com. I'm getting into a lot of different avenues right now, so things are looking up.
Okay. Oh, that's good. That is very good. And Jadino is definitely, he's a magnificent artist, so please check him out over there on Facebook and check Jay's page out over there on Erotic Talk Radio. Become a member and stay in touch with all the sexy, sensual, erotic news feeds that she has going on over there. And, of course, everybody knows or should know that I am Gail Delicious Johnson, an author, publisher, ghostwriter, and I do so many things. My book, Back to Zero, has been revised, and the book is it is just perfect now. So go to my website, which is J Publishing, that's J-A-Y Publishing.com, and pick up your copy or copies and give them out as gifts. And all I look for in return is an honest review. You can send that review to my email address, and I do appreciate that. And I'm working on a few more books. 2015, I'm having a book that's going to come out. It's going to grab you in the butt. I'm just going to give you a little itty-bitty teaser about it. It's a book about a hit woman who kill somebody. Hit woman is delicious. All right. So that'll be out in 2015. I'll be looking for that. The title, I think, is not written in stone, but the title may be titled Her Last Hit or Delicious Last Hit, you know, but look out for that in 2015. And I'm working on a couple other books right now. so, you know, just stay in tune. I'm on Facebook, LinkedIn, I'm everywhere. And if it's anything, you know, you really, really, really want to know, just Google Gail Delicious Johnson. And remember, Bringing Sexy Back is for the mature listening audience. Our subject matter is sexual, but not limited to other social topics. We discuss relationships, current events, and issues relevant to everyday life. We appreciate you, our listening audience, for your questions and comments. And if you have a topic you'd like for us to discuss or would like to be a guest on the show, send an email to me, gjdelicious37@gmail.com. or to either of my co-hosts, that's Rhea at RheaAlexis@yahoo.com, RHEAALEXIS@yahoo.com. And you also can send an email to JDinoBlasco, that's J.DinoBlasco@gmail.com. And in the subject line, type topic or guest. We're here every Wednesday from 10:30 p.m. for an hour to an hour and a half, and if the topic is juicy, we're generally here for the whole 2 hours of adult conversations. And I do want to let everybody out there know that I appreciate you for stopping by. Thank you, Jade and Jadino, and our special guest, William, for stopping by. Love you guys. Be safe. Have a beautiful weekend. If you're drinking, don't drive. If you're driving, don't drink. I love talking to you guys, not about you. With that being said, good night, everybody. Love you. Thank you.
Night.
Good night.
Thank you, Gail.
You're welcome, dear.
My Nana got the best radio show on the internet.